and just occasionally we come across interesting clips. And he sent a batch of tapes the other day with a 5-minute clip from one of the tapes, which I thought was quite good, quite interesting. It's from the early 80s. It's only 5 minutes, and it's Nishijima Roshi talking about the chapter which was in book one, which you've already done, not doing wrongs. It's only brief, but at the end, my voice comes in asking questions. The clever guy in the back of the room. So I could play that, and then maybe we could discuss. The easiest way is probably for me to play it on my iPhone into the microphone here. There is a way to play my computer sound straight into Zoom, but I think faffing about will probably take half an hour. Not doing wrong. Just tell me if you can hear it. I'll just play a little bit of it. The first 30 seconds is some woman asking a question. It's very faint, even on the original. It's difficult to hear. But then Nishijima Roshi's voice booms in. So see if you can hear this.
But is there no actions like maybe killing a human being or an animal? This is not bad.
Human beings have ability to do wrong intentionally. When we are natural, when we are balanced, we can never do anything wrong.
So, okay. Okay, I continue then.
But at the same time, human beings have excellent ability to do wrong. This is the situation.
And also, we don't do right thing.
When we have consciousness that we have done good, it is tainted situation.
Tainted.
Therefore, to do right is also impossible for us. We are doing our conduct in day-to-day life, and those conduct are not right and wrong. But many people think that this is right, this is wrong. And that distinguishing attitude is denied in Buddhism. In our day-to-day life, we are doing something which cannot be called right or wrong.
There's some problem with the explaining, I suppose, because when you tell us the fact that we shouldn't worry about right or wrong, you can't, it's impossible to stop discriminating. I can say what you tell me is right. What is the essential fact? Is it not to worry? Is that the essential fact? Or is the content of right or the content of wrong?
is facts in your brain.
Yes, but my brain's in this world.
Yes, yes.
I can't ignore it.
But images in your brain are different from real world. Many people do not recognize this fact. And images in our brain is real something, something real. But this is wrong understanding. And in this chapter, Master Dogen explained difference between images in our brains and real facts.
Oh yes, I suppose in many situations we can never know whether what we do is right or wrong, because we can't see the whole of the situation. But I'm puzzled why about the sentence, don't do wrong, do right. Don't do wrong is an instruction.
Yes, so it is explanation of words. So in reality, there are facts, and there is not right and wrong. But in our brain, we have criteria of right and wrong. So we can think not to do wrong or to do right.
So does Buddhism recommend that we think not to do wrong and that we think to do right?
So we should recognize real situation which is different from images or in our brains.
What should we do with the images in our brains?
That's the end.
So what should we be doing with the images in our brains?
We don't know the answer.
After all these years. Okay.
That was the way he gave his talks, always insisting. And often he would get a phrase in English, which he became familiar with, and he'd use it. The images in our brain, he would use a lot again and again. So that's what I got brainwashed with for nearly 30 years. So what he says in that clip is very strange, really, to modern way of thinking, isn't it? Or is it normal? Would you think, oh yeah, that's no problem?
I don't know, it's the thing I was getting at, right and wrong aren't objective realities, they're big mental constructs. That's kind of what I was getting, which I think a lot of people would agree with that. I think that's probably backed up by science and stuff.
But there also seems to be an implication in the Dogen that there's such a thing as doing right. That in the action it is real.
So what makes an action right?
Yeah, that's the question, isn't it? Why does he say if we practice asan, we can never do wrong? Sounds like a get out, really, doesn't it?
It is a bit unsettling, yeah, if you're used to feeling that you need to keep your guard up to make sure you're not doing anything wrong, and the feeling that you could just let go of that sort of supervision entirely and trust in the activity, meaning that you won't do wrong, that's quite unsettling, yeah.
Does it also hinge on the fact that any judgment we make about right and wrong is always an intellectual, idealistic judgment? It's never based on anything other than our intellectual reflection, you know, in terms of labeling something right and wrong. Whereas if we act in the moment of the present in accordance with our entire sense of what the right thing is to do, then there's no debate, is there?
What's our entire sense of what the right thing is to do? What do you mean by that?
I'm not entirely sure what I mean.
It seems on the one hand that we can think of things that happen in the world apart from us as following natural laws. So things like mountains eroding and plants growing, they're right because they're following natural laws. But when we think of what's happening with ourselves, we don't really appreciate that can happen, that we can be an evolution of prior circumstances. We want to know better than that.
Isn't there an also sense of right or wrong as to whether you're harming or helping people?
Well, that's a judgment, isn't it? And even if you think you are helping people, it may turn out that you weren't. So that's something that I think we find difficult to grasp, that even if we're doing something with a good conscious intent, the result isn't always that. So maybe if we're doing something in a calm way, in a balanced way, then we kind of automatically do what seems appropriate.
Maybe after sitting zazen for quite a while, because I'm thinking also about many of our actions are reactions. They are not actions, sort of pure actions of what is needed at the right time. They are reactions of, I don't know, fed by our education, our fears, our conditioning, our society, different ones, different cultures have different rights and wrongs as well. But I'm going even more to the personal, not just to the cultural conditioning. So I guess that there is no right and wrong action, but after quite a while, not just to start with, that's what I think.
So at some point,
yeah.
We can say, okay, I don't need to worry anymore. I'm doing right all the time.
Well, you're not saying I'm doing right all the time, even because those two concepts don't exist anymore. But I don't see the straight away, really. I don't know.
I mean, it's very challenging, there's no question about it. And it's very difficult to discuss it without, you know, kind of reiterating one's habits of mind, because we're reflecting on something someone said. Whereas when I act and I do something in the moment of the present, a lot of the time there isn't any debate. I just do it. I don't really debate it. I don't debate whether I pick my cup up or not and sip my tea and then put my cup back. You know, I don't, there's millions of things throughout the day where I don't have a big debate, isn't there? About whether it's right or wrong. But as soon as we're in a situation of reflection, we're then into judgment and evaluation, aren't we?
But many of our actions are without thinking, and they are reactions.
Yeah.
Reactions due to our conditioning. And we don't think about it. We don't reflect at all. Because maybe we reflect, we stop a little bit and decide that maybe it's better not to do it or do it in a different way. So I don't know. I don't know, Mike.
Well, I think also, you know, people's reactions. I mean, at school, if you do something and then the teacher blows his top and says you've been an idiot, you sort of internalise the fact that maybe that was the wrong thing to do.
Yeah.
So we're conditioned to be judged about what is right and wrong about our actions, aren't we?
I mean, we do that, though. We have compassion for others. We feel guilt if we think we've done something, or I feel guilty if I think I've done something selfish at another person's expense.
But is your guilt a real, genuine feeling in yourself, or is it a social construct imposed by someone else?
Is that a meaningful difference?
Yes.
I don't think so.
Hmm. Your emotions, you feel your emotions regardless of where they come from. I think there is some evidence that compassion is innate anyway. It's not that it's not something that everybody has to be taught.
What do you, compassion?
Mm, yeah.
Well, what is compassion? I've never known, really.
Concern for others, I think. Concern for the, yeah. A wish. Wish to prevent harm to others.
Okay.
So I think that this action in the moment is very good and is sometimes available, sort of a pure. But I think that other times it's fed by other things, like what I was saying, reactions. And
even if it is, does that make a difference?
The reaction thing.
Yeah, I mean, even if you've got, as everyone has, kind of preconditioning, then you can either still act as best you can in the moment, or you can deliberate about it for a couple of hours and then do something.
Well, usually the reaction is straight away, most of the time. And what happens is afterward you get it wrong. Or you judge it bad,
okay.
Because either the consequences for yourself or the consequences for others or the consequences that are going to come. Because you're not coming
talking
from
about social constructions. I mean, for example, if I give food to charity, and I feel good and I think I've done the right thing, and then it turns out that one of the people I fed goes and does a crime, does that make my donation of food right or wrong?
I don't think there's such a thing as right or wrong in what you're doing, Mark.
I asked the question, though. By what criteria would my action be regarded as right or wrong?
I don't think it matters. I think you just have to decide whether you want to give food to charity next time.
So I think you've just articulated what Dogen is trying to get at. Is that there is no criteria of right and wrong outside of our actions. And we can only go by what feels right, can't we?
What do you mean by what feels right?
Well, I mean, God, how do you articulate it? It's an intuitive sense, for want of a better word, isn't it? Based on how things evolve after I've done them. So, I mean, it's so complex to define, isn't it?
Yeah. I think primarily Dogen always writes for people who are practicing Zazen. That's the first thing. And Nishijima's comments are addressed to people who practice Zazen. Because he asserts and believes that practicing Zazen balances us. Quite what that means is needs more investigation, really. There are loads of explanations of Zazen which say, you enter the Dharma and you become world one with the universe and blah, 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 blah. There are lots of kind of pseudo-Buddhist expressions for what Zazen is. And these are in some ways reinforced by Dogen's beautiful language when he says, in the very first chapter, he says, we sit with the whole universe and, you know, we practice with the gods in heaven and all this kind of poetic, beautiful poetic stuff. But Nishijima Roshi, who studied Dogen for more than 70 years, his view was, in the end, Zazen is just sitting in a posture that brings our body-mind into balance. And his most favourite and most important to him explanation of balance was based on the autonomic nervous system, where he explains that we have two opposing nervous systems in the body, one which excites us and one which does the opposite. So balance between them is the kind of balance that Nishijima would insist that you get from Zazen. He never talked about entering the Dharma or sitting with the universe. He just said, if you sit in the posture of Zazen, not trying intentionally to get anything, then you get this balance. But half the time you don't know you've got it. So it doesn't matter if you know whether you've got it or not. And this is not that much different from something like saying, go running every day and you'll become healthy and balanced. It doesn't matter whether when you run today, it's running's difficult, or when you run today, you're in the zone. Just run. It's the running itself that makes you feel fit. It gets you fit. So his approach to Zazen was like that. So his explanation would have been something like, for those people who practice balance, and for him that he always meant Zazen, but he didn't exclude the fact that there may be other ways to get balance. But if you practice balance regularly, then as far as you can, with the body and mind you have, you will be balanced. You may not be as balanced as somebody else, but as long as you practice balance, you will be, as far as possible, balanced. And when you're balanced as far as possible for you, then what you do is a result of that. Full stop. And right and wrong are a kind of pre or post judgments on that action. And most of the time he's talking about immediate actions rather than, I mean, we use word, we say action of the action of contributing to donating to a charity. Well, that's not in a simple sense, it's not an action. It's a big series of actions following a plan. So he's really talking about simpler actions. So in the case that you said, Angela, where our responses are reactions, that's the way it is. So I've got some reactions, I've got triggers, and so I react. But provided I've done my balancing of body and mind, then that's the best I can do. So it's almost a too simple approach, really. But he believed it, absolutely. Because that's what Dogen says. So there's only one thing to do, and that is practice zazen, practice balance, and then to act.
So you practice balance, you act, you notice that you have reacted because a trigger has been touched. You said, well, that's the best I could do. And you carry on practicing balancing and reacting in the same way because that's the best that you can do. Or you see that by practicing balancing, eventually you are less reactive. I think that's what I want to go. Yeah. Is it by practicing zazen that eventually all those reactions are sort of eroded or deleted or?
Yeah. Well, there's another of Dogen's teachings says that the reality appears and disappears at every moment. Mm. Otherwise, how could a bad action in the past be erased, and how could we do a new action, a good action in the present? So it's looking at life as momentary. Mm. So, okay, you reacted to this instant, but the next instant, you act again. So you're always acting again. And if your actions are always reactions, then practicing zazen will balance you, and over time, that balance will make you less reactive.
Hmm.
It's too simple a theory for us modern people, but that's what it is.
What about not maintaining right and wrong while you're doing it? While you're acting.
So while you're acting, it's impossible to think.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean a long-term acting according to a plan. It means a simple action in the present.
Yeah.
It's impossible to think. That's a big assertion, really. And the only way it can be validated is by seeing how neuroscience is getting on, really. I mean, they're looking at these kind of ways that human beings behave. So is it true that we can't think when we're acting?
It's So what does Dogen mean when he says don't maintain right and wrong? Is that in between actions?
Yes, it doesn't mean... where does he say that?
I'm trying to remember, but I'm sure I remember it.
Okay. Well, it sounds like he don't maintain right and wrong means don't hang on to abstract concepts of right and wrong. He says in part of that not doing wrong chapter that you've done already, there is no such thing as right that exists somewhere waiting for us to find it and then do it. So he's saying that the concept of right is just, like Nishijima says, an image in our brain, and entirely unrelated to a characteristic of our action. Characteristics of action don't include right and wrong. The action itself, if we take it apart, we can't find right and wrong in the action. Right and wrong exist as images in our mind.
So not in the action in itself. Maybe not even when you're acting. What about the consequences of the action? Can they not be... I'm talking about judging, obviously.
Yeah.
Okay, the action in itself is not right or wrong, but actions have consequences.
Yeah.
So what about the consequences of the actions?
What about them?
I don't know. If we don't judge the action, okay, I don't know where I'm going, but we don't judge the actions, but actions have consequences. So,
what is the consequence of an action, actually? What is it really?
Cause and effect, isn't it?
Well, that's what I'm talking about, is the effect of an action. So, the consequences are the effects of an action, okay? And there are effects that can be positive, creative, I don't know.
But they're not always predictable.
No, they're not always predictable. And also they can be in a long term ahead. So yes, I know. But there are effects. So I'm not going against what we are talking about, acting in the moment or anything, but I'm trying to see to what extent is an action, I don't know.
Those are all judgments after the event, aren't they? Positive, good, creative. They're all judgments.
Yeah, I know.
They're not embodied realities by any standard of the here and now, of something concrete, are they? They're all intellectual constructions, aren't they?
They don't have to be, because the effects can be very real. The effects can be visible and tangible. So they don't have to be only intellectual.
But only you can call them good or bad. They're just the results.
And also other people may disagree.
Should I bring the builder that is driving me mad to the arena?
Oh. I'm not picking on you. I'm just...
No. I'm sorry. I'm just joking.
Dogen is raising something and Nishijima in that talk that we don't really understand. We're kind of thrown into the unknown with it because it's so different to the way we live.
Well, we seem to live in a different world, the world of action and consequences, the world of right and wrong, trying to improve our behaviour by looking at what we do. I mean, I do it. It's a mode of living. It's a world in which we exist.
It's part of our Christian culture, isn't it?
Yeah, I suppose Christianity has given its own flavour to it. with things like sin and redemption and those kind of things. But it's like we live in two worlds. One world is the world of doing things, hoping that what we do is right, being pleased when we find it's right and disappointed when we find it's wrong, guilt, blame, consequences, reactions, actions. We know that world, we live in it. We try our best to sort it out and make sure that our behavior is compassionate and the best we can and not bad and so on. So that's the world we live in. But the world that Dogen's pointing out is strangely different. And it doesn't seem to fit together. If we try and fit together the logic of Dogen's world with the world we inhabit, it doesn't seem to fit. So, you know, what about consequences? If we just act in the moment and we're balanced and that's it, what about consequences? Well, that's because we're shifting back to our normal world. So it always reminds me of the difference between, in physics, there's two paradigms for reality. There's the Newtonian paradigm, which is how we run the world. Things obey Newton's laws. And there's the quantum paradigm, where we're not sure what things are or whether they're where we think they are. And when we look for them, they may not be there. How do those worlds fit together? And it's something similar, as if the world Dogen's trying to describe is it underneath or above or inside our normal world? And that's the puzzle, isn't it?
Both just different takes on the that word ineffable reality.
Yes. It's something that even Nagarjuna in the 2nd century BC addressed. He called it, there's an ultimate world, ultimate reality, and then there's constructed reality, or daily life. And many people either tried to live in one or live in the other. And he said, they're both the same thing. So our problem is, if we're interested in Dogen's teaching about ultimate reality, how does that fit in with the way what we normally think about doing something and having a result and whether the result is what we wanted and all those? Because in a way, Dogen's approach just says, just do it. In the next moment, they just do it. In the next moment, just do it. So it in a way, it denies cause and effect.
Yep.
Denies action and result.
Yep.
It denies time. It denies all the things which we value and believe in.
Yeah.
So it's really weird in a way.
But so, nevertheless, we sense that it's about something very dear to us.
Well, it's true, isn't it, that there's only now?
Yep.
That's the bugbear. It is actually true. It is only, whatever you say, actually, There is only now. We can only do something now. So everything else about whether our actions are right or wrong, have a result in the future, are the result of our actions in the past, make no sense. There's only now. And now I can only do what I do.
Yeah.
And what I do may be affected by my state. So if I look after my state and I do, what else is there? There ain't nothing else really. But that's, it's quite, in a way, severe, bare bones, skeleton view of what we think life is.
Well, the whole issue makes me think of one of your observations, Mike, that society is a construction in our heads.
And
it, you know, as you're talking, I'm thinking back to my childhood when I used to just do things. And my dad would blow up into a fury and say, "What the fuck do you think you're doing?" You know, and then
I can imagine the small Mark doing these things.
Yeah. But Dogen's pointing somehow to that childhood state in a way.
Yeah.
Which is scary.
Yeah.
In the sense that I've learned so well to do what I'm told. Sort of.
Well, I don't think you learned that well, Mark, actually.
I had a funny feeling you might say that, Mike.
No, I understand better now, Matt. Mike, Matt. When you said you act, and then you act, and then you act, and then you act. So you act.
Yes. And that is true freedom.
Yeah.
According to Dogen and Michinini. Yeah. And that's the only freedom we have.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's impossible for us to drop off our
very difficult
social constructs
from
moment to moment unless we develop dementia or Alzheimer's or something which stops our brain linking episodes in the past and future and present together.
If we're watching the lottery be drawn and they draw the numbers 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6, one after the other, we'd be amazed. Like, it would seem hugely significant, but there's exactly the same probability of that sequence of numbers being drawn as any other.
Yes, that's true.
Each draw is completely new. It's a completely, you know, new probability set.
Yeah.
And yet, probably if you get into serious maths, that turns out not to be true, but I think it's basically true. And yet, a single sequence of numbers being drawn can have massive consequences for a real person in the real world, because we've constructed this society that attributes meaning to things.
It always amazed me that Nishijima Roshi was so convinced, you can hear it in his voice, so it is just the image in your brain. You know, it's not, there's no doubt about it in his mind.
But it's so difficult, Mike. No, it's so difficult to just act and act and act and act without thinking, without...
Yes, but actually, it's what all sports people endeavour to do. And I've just been watching a series of Netflix's Formula One. These young racing drivers hurtling around Formula One tracks at 200 miles an hour. That's what they're trying to do. Well, there's loads of other things like competition and winning and all that. But essentially, that's what everybody's trying to do, is just act, just act, just act. I mean, everybody in those fields.
Yeah.
But to do it, we have to give up our intentions.
Mm.
And that doesn't work in many of our valued areas of social interaction. Like in business, it's no good giving up your intention, is it? Or is it? So Dogen said we have to leave social reality in order to see what it's about. He said leaving family life, but by that expression, he means leaving the constructed society in which we live. In his time, leaving it meant going off and living in the temple. In our time, it can mean understanding it and not being trapped by it. Or we can give up and say, those nutty Buddhists, I'm just going to get on with my life and, you know, take my full part in society. Surrender all my information to Google, get an expensive car. have opinions about the government. Have opinions about everything that I know nothing about. So it's the Buddhist way, is what they traditionally call it, is in a way, it is a way. It's somehow following something which is separate from the normal world we live in, but without rejecting that world. So there are not many people interested, really.
When we talk about acting like this, or action like this, is there such a thing as not acting?
Yeah.
Or is it just as long as you're alive, are you constantly acting one way or the other?
It seems so. In the latest theory about mind and body is some of the latest theories come from biology, where they've realized in research that everything is acting. You know, cells are acting, and the molecules within the cells are acting, and so on. And so the whole of reality is acting. And that action appears to have its own intelligence. You know, DNA is the code which has, they say, DNA carries the code for the development of life. So even in the smallest living particle, there's some direction or intelligence. So this theory, I think it's called the Santiago theory of system theory of cognition. is that the whole of life is action which contains a cognitive process, because everything is acting in some way. And biologists find that everything they look at that's moving is acting in some way, in some direction. Life has its direction. So the latest idea is that that direction is a kind of cognitive intelligence.
So when we were talking about Dogen's slightly ua-sounding, the whole universe is in harmony with you when you're in balance.
Yeah.
It's not that far away.
No, it's not. It's not. No, it's not. Instead of looking at life as a vast mechanism, people, researchers have started looking at life as a system or a network. Everything's related to everything else. And everything is a manifestation of action. But on the more superficial level, is there non-action? Yeah, I suppose there is. You can not do something. But is not doing something passive? Well, if you don't do something, well, it's not, you can't have not doing something. It has to be not doing. Because if you say not doing something, it's assuming that there's something that you were going to do and you're not doing it. If you do, if you don't do something that you intended to do, then it's not doing it is definitely an action. It's an action of inhibition. But are there things in the world that don't do anything? Well, maybe the jury's out on that one. Is matter inert? Even rocks are decomposing.
Mm-hmm.
Is that an action? Are those particles in the rock acting? Is there a movement there? So maybe we can't answer the question yet. We have to wait for the scientists to catch up a bit.
What do you mean by action? What does it even mean?
Pardon?
What do we mean by action? What does it
mean? Yeah, exactly. What thickens? Nishijima Roshi always thought that science would always validate Dogen's teachings. And I have to say that so far, I agree with him, it has. Whether it, I'd like to think it always will. You know, that the more scientists find out, or physicists, the more it'll explain kind of cryptic comments made by this guy in the 13th century, or the even more cryptic comments made by people like Nagarjuna in the 2nd century.
Do you have confidence that many people will be interested in what the scientists have to say?
Yeah. we will be interested, Matt, because by that time they will be controlling us. They, the people with their hands on the big data, will be controlling us all.
I thought they were advertisers.
Well, they'd be advertising science. Contribute to research into action in particles. As I know, I've reached the limit of what I can say, really.
That was good.
Thanks for playing us that clip. And so they're all going up on the website now.
There's a little in there already. That clip won't go up as a clip. It's part of whole talk. What he used to do was every Saturday he'd give a lecture for an hour. But at the beginning of the lecture, he'd talk about something, whatever he felt like. Like he'd talk about the balanced state, or he'd talk about science and Buddhism, or he'd talk about world history, or for about 5, 10, 15 minutes. When people would ask questions, or if there weren't any questions, he'd go on with them. Latest chapter of the Shobel Genza. So all the tapes which are on the website, digitized MP3 files on the website, are all recordings of his talks, then they've all got some kind of commentary in the beginning, general commentary, and then they carry on with the chapter of the Shobel Genza. Some of them a bit torturous to listen to because sometimes he spoke very, very slowly. With big gaps between his words.
Foreign language, I suppose.
Yeah. Yes, he, in his Japanese lecture, he just talked normally and fluently. But in English, he talked very slowly and carefully. Anyway, the tapes are there. I don't know anybody will be interested in them. Some people might be, but it's an archive. They're there for whoever wants them.
Well, thanks so much, mate. Okay.
What for?
Well, just sort of all the effort and whatever you've had to do to find them and get them up there.
Oh, that's okay. I feel it's kind of... like putting flowers on his grave, really, paying tribute to my teacher. There's also 2000, there's 5 years worth of videos of his talks in the early 2000s. Somebody started, instead of just audio recordings, they're videos. They're all on the website already.
Wow.
So they're the same thing, but they're videos.
Yeah.